The Bright Side Home Theater Podcast is a spoiler podcast. The opinions and reviews are solely those of the Bright Side Home Theater Podcast.
This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
This is Bright Side Home Theater.
Hey, welcome back, Home Theater Nerds. My name is DJ. This week I'm going to be talking about the latest 4K release of Terminator 2, which came out last July, I believe, 2018, and my overall experience with Terminator 2, going back to 1992. But before we get into all that, let's talk to Justin about some high-def disc news. Hey, Justin, we're back for another week of high-def disc news. How you doing? How's your week been?
Hey, DJ. Busy.
That's good.
Catching up on reviews, trying to stay busy with work, but able to do this, and it's a pleasure to do so.
I've been looking forward to it all week. What do we got coming up next week for, what's next week? Tuesday, November 12th. What do we got coming up for theatrical releases?
Next week on theatrical releases, you're only going to see one title get a 4K. It's going to be the Angry Birds movie 2. That movie is also going to subsequently obviously get a Blu-ray counterpart. New releases of movies that were just in theaters and such to that regards. The movie Farewell, that's gonna get a release. It seems to have done really good with critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Speaking of which, the Peanut Butter Falcon is also gonna get a Blu-ray only. Neither one of those are gonna get a 4K treatment, and both Lionsgate. I don't know why that is, but those two movies are two new releases coming out, as well as the movie Good Boys, which was produced by Seth Rogen. That's going to get a release this week on Blu-ray. 47 Meters Down, Uncaged. That's a sequel to the movie 47 Meters Down. That's getting a release as well from Lionsgate, as well as the film Bliss from this year. Dark Sky Films is going to release that. That's most of the notable new theatrical titles getting their first home video debut.
All right, cool. What do we got for new catalog titles? Anything new coming out next week?
For catalog, you're going to see some older films finally see the light of day on Blu-ray. I'll trademark that. The World, the Flesh, and the Devil from 1959. Warner Archive is going to be releasing that. And you're going to have two titles from Kino Lorber Studio Classics with Thunderbolt and Lightfoot and Winter Kills. It's worth noting that Thunderbolt and Lightfoot stars Clint Eastwood and co-stars Jeff Bridges, and Winter Kills stars Jeff Bridges as well. So there's kind of a Jeff Bridges theme going on over there. Kino Lorber this way, it appears. So there's also the Nutty Professor collection. So that's coming out through Shot Factory.
Is the original one?
The Eddie Murphy ones.
Okay.
You're going to get both of the Eddie Murphy movies. I believe the second film has never been on Blu-ray yet, so it's going to be the first time it gets it released on Blu-ray. The 1954 Western starring Jimmy Stewart, The Far Country, is going to come out via Arrow Academy. And The Day Trippers, a 1996 film, is going to get released via the Criterion Collection. So there's a few catalog titles coming out. That's about it, though.
Okay. We got anything coming out that's being re-released?
Re-released this week, you actually got a weird anniversary set here. You got a Heather's 30th anniversary steelbook, and it's not just a re-release and repackaging. It actually does have new bonus materials.
Oh, really?
So it's not a new transfer or anything to that regard. It's not a new restoration or anything. It's probably just the identical disc that was previously released of the film. However, it does contain new bonus materials, so that's worth noting. It's not really any other catalog titles that are getting a re-release that have been previously available in the format. other than that. And that one is a unique scenario, I think, because it actually is not just the double dip to cash in on something and not include anything new extra. So
for Heather's, though, when was how many have they released so far? I remember one.
There's been probably two different Blu-rays on that. One was because I believe distribution rights and it may have changed hands.
Didn't they do a 20th anniversary one as well? Like, this is the 30th, so.
Yeah, I believe that one was in an Image Entertainment, and that's probably the disc that you're getting on this one.
Oh, okay.
You're probably getting that as the first disc. It's a two-disc set, so the second disc probably has just the bonus materials housed on it. It's actually shown in the product image, so. It's definitely a new disc has been added there, so it is an actual anniversary edition of sorts.
That's good. At least you're getting something extra for 30 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a re-release that's just trying to cash in on the anniversary namesake. So it's an actual anniversary edition of sorts.
Yeah. So any other odds and ends? I know we have one other big thing coming up next week. We'll save that for last. But any other odds and ends before we get to that last one?
You've got some TV shows coming out this week. Star Trek Discovery Season 2. We'll get a normal standard Blu-ray release as well as a Best Buy exclusive steelbook. Then you're going to get finally the 12th and final season of The Big Bang Theory on Blu-ray, as well as the complete series of The Big Bang Theory will be released as a box set.
That'll be interesting to see how that sells. That's a pretty popular show.
Heads up on that already, though. I'm already seeing listings on retailers for another re-release of that complete series next year, like early next year. Don't know what that's about, but
that's in, like, why? Like,
what? I don't know. I don't know. I just thought that was worth including, and I thought the same to myself because it's just now going to see the light of day, you know, come mid-November. So I don't really quite understand why I'm seeing retailer listings that say The Big Bang Theory, the complete series or something, you know, for a title that's like coming out in February or something.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be a DVD version of it I don't know about or something like that. I don't follow DVD close enough to know if there is a DVD counterpart of that. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be ashamed of not following DVD, I would hope. But that's it on the odds and ends there. And then, yeah, we got one final thing here.
Yeah, for those of you that have been saving your pennies.
You might want to be saving more than pennies.
Exactly.
You might want to take that mattress out finally.
Yeah.
This one is a really, really swanky release, is all I got to say. You got to be a real fan, man.
Yeah.
To really plunge into this one. But if you do, you know, if you got the money and you want to play, for $550, yeah, I'm going to let that sink in. For $550, the Infinity Saga Collector's Edition, for all of you Marvel Cinematic Universe fans, you will be able to get all 23 of the films.
Yep.
And you're also going to get this bonus disc that's got some exclusive, it says, never before seen, deleted and extended scenes, and more. So that's kind of vague. It doesn't really tell us if there's new featurettes, maybe some new director interviews or something we've never seen. Yeah. We're not really going to know. And this is an exception, too, because this release is coming out on the 15th, which will be a Friday.
That's weird,
Not a Tuesday. It's worth noting this. This is a Best Buy exclusive. It seems to be very apparent, even though it's not noted on their listing. You're not going to find it listed anywhere else. I'm not seeing.
Nope.
And it's also worth noting that it's just listed as coming soon, this close to the release.
Right.
As we're recording this, obviously, a little ahead of time there, and it's still grayed out as coming soon, so you can't order it. But if you could, theoretically, there is actually a financing plan for this $550 release. I thought that was only fitting if there ever were any type of thing to go with seeing a release of that pricing.
Yeah.
And then seeing something to go with it there, that was always pretty fitting. At first I thought that was a joke or something, but if you're willing to pay it, you know, $30.56, I think it says it's here a month for 18 months of financing.
Jeez. That's funny.
You know what? If you're a Marvel fan, I can see some Marvel fans that
Well,
already, speaking of, you know, bought it already, you know, you and I were talking about why is it grayed out? You can't order it right now. Because I think, and I'm almost positive here, I've seen it where it was yellow on Best Buy where you can click add to cart and actually buy it. I'm thinking to myself here, do you think they really sold out already? And they, or they don't know how many they're getting or something like that? And
they could have.
That sounds absurd to me that, at first though, that $550 box set could sell out. But, you know, there are a lot of fans of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I would not put it past them.
It's about 24 bucks a movie.
Something like that.
It's a little cheaper than the going, actually it's about $6 to $8 cheaper than the going rate for a 4K.
Yeah, they're not in traditional cases either. They're in this collectible, you know, packaging and all that.
Yeah, so. $550 and you can't even get a square case.
No, it's not even in a blue, well, actually it'd be black for the 4K. It's not even the black 4K.
I gotta be honest with you, I'm looking at this thing as a display piece to put into my theater.
It is
a nice looking set.
I think it would be something that a collector definitely buys.
Yeah.
And if they open it, they would probably open it and display it like the beauty shot that you're seeing there.
Yeah.
And then just put it behind glass. I don't think they're even going to watch these movies from this. They're going to watch it from their...
Well, I'd have to watch that extra disc, that one disc that, you know, the one disc I'm paying the $550 for.
Yeah. Anybody that buys this and doesn't watch that bonus disc is going to be kicking themselves, I would imagine. It'll be interesting to see what this is like. I'm sure there's, you know, some followers of my site and such that'll probably pick this up. I wouldn't put it past them.
Yep.
I'll be curious to see what the thing really looked like for those brave enough, or like I said, that don't want to kick themselves and open it up to get that bonus disc footage and figure out what's on there, you know. That's going to be an interesting release. It's definitely caught my eye and a lot of people's eye.
We'll have some more information on it next week because our next podcast after this will come out next Friday. So that's the day it's released, and maybe, obviously, we won't have a definitive answer of whether it came out on that Friday or not, but maybe we'll have a little bit more information by then.
We may on that Friday, hopefully via social media. Hopefully we'll see We'll see some people going to stores and such, hopefully spotting that bad boy on the shelf. I imagine that thing's going to be sporting the spider security device.
Oh, yeah.
And you know the sad thing about that, and briefly on this, the sad thing about those spider security devices they put on box sets, those things really bend the packaging.
Yeah.
I've noticed almost every time I've ever seen anything with one of those on it, it's damaged the packaging so much that no collector would ever consider buying it, especially if they had OCD. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe a strategy in the future of places, retailers like Best Buy and stuff. Maybe you should just put like a thing on the shelf for the people, like pick it up and take it up to the front counter and they go get one.
Yep.
You know, that's just a thought and an observation. I've thought of that numerous times at Best Buy. I think I thought of that when I saw the Batman Steelbook 4K set recently that Best Buy had the exclusive of that. And I just saw it just, you know, being brutally bent to no collector's desire.
Right.
By one of these anti-theft devices, and it's just kind of sad that they ruin something and it probably has to just get sent back where somebody pays less than the retail for.
Right.
Kind of sad. End on that note. Hate to end on a sad note, but.
That's all right.
Hopefully we'll have some uplifting news next week regarding this.
I'm sure we will. It's always uplifting. It's a fun hobby.
At least some clue of what's on that bonus disc. I'll be curious.
Yep. Hopefully.
All right.
Where can we find you?
At highdefdisnews.com as well as at highdefdisnews on Twitter. And you want to spell that H-I-G-H on Twitter, but you'll get the site either way if you go to the .com.
Your website and your Twitter handle are both on the show notes every week. So.
Right on.
So if people forget, just go to the show notes and you can click on both of them right there.
Read up, get educated. Yep.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Justin. We'll talk next
week. All right.
Week.
Thank you. Thanks, DJ.
All right. That was great. I got to admit, I'm really looking forward to that special edition, Infinity Saga set. I don't know if I'm going to get it. I haven't made that decision yet. That is a lot of money, but it is pulling at me. So anyways, I can't wait to head into the theater and talk about Terminator 2.
Same make.
These were taken at the West Highland Police Station, 1984. You were there.
Same model.
These were taken today.
You have to let me see my son. He's in great danger.
New mission.
Mom! Come with me if you want to live.
Terminator 2, Judgment Day. This time, he's back. For good.
Trust me.
Last week, I said Star Wars was the foundation of my home theater. Well, if Star Wars is the foundation, then Terminator 2 is the house that my home theater was built on. I had a home theater, like I said before, with two speakers long before Terminator 2 came out. But I feel like Terminator 2 to me was really where I started to get into the multi-channel aspect. I really don't have a lot of memories before Terminator 2. I know there were movies before Terminator 2 that I watched in my home theater, like Die Hard for one. I said that last week. But it just didn't resonate as well. And I think a lot of that credit goes to James Cameron and the way he used the sound in this movie. You can have a theater with only two channels. And I really think that James Cameron knew that when he made this movie. Terminator 2 has so many pans going from left to right and right to left across the front of the screen. In most of the first act, you're seeing the presentation of like a Terminator pulling up, whether it's the T-1000 pulling up in the police car and the pans from the right side to the left side. And then the same when Arnold pulls up on the Harley when he's chasing John Connor, or not really chasing him, but following him, and his Harley pulls up from the right to the left. They're super, super obvious pans with the front speakers. So you literally, if you only have a two channel speaker, that's going to sound really, really good. And I think James Cameron did that on purpose. I think he knew what he was doing for the home theater fan when this would eventually come out on VHS and then again on the Laserdisc. And I'll get into that in a second, but one thing I heard about James Cameron way, way back in the 90s. So when he shot The Abyss, and this is what kind of leads me in that direction that he does this stuff for the home release. I think James Cameron knew that home video was going to be even bigger than it was. Like video, VHS was pretty much in its infancy in the 80s into the 90s, and home theater was kind of fairly new to the general public. I mean, it was around, but it wasn't like it is today. Like, everybody knows what home theater is today, whether you have one or not, but people know what it is. Back then, I don't feel like it was as big a deal. Like, people would look at me sideways when I said I had a theater or a home theater. But James Cameron, I remember hearing when he shot The Abyss that he shot that in what we would consider IMAX now, which was like a 4x3 screen, 4x3 ratio, which was the old televisions. Well, he shot it that way and then cropped it for the movies. So he cropped it to like a 185, I think, or something, whatever it was. But he shot it in the taller aspect ratio because he knew when it went to video, people don't like the bars at the top and the bottom. Even though that, like, if you were a home theater fan, you wanted the bars at the top and the bottom because that's the way it was presented in the theater. But when you watch The Abyss and it was
it filled your screen. You actually got more information. It wasn't cropped. It was actually added. He added the top and the bottom to it because he knew he wanted to play to the home theater fan. So like I said, I don't know how true that is, but I do remember hearing that story, and that lends me to the idea that he was thinking ahead, not just for the theatrical release, but how his movies would play out in the long run. And he knew the longevity of home theater and how much fun these movies are to people like us. So that's why I really feel like Terminator 2 for me was the first movie that it really just blows you away just by the front two channels. Home theater is a lot of fun when you engage the rear channels, and now we have overheads. And if you have a home theater that has an overhead speakers, we want movies that play overhead stuff. You want to hear that stuff engaged. If you're listening to this podcast and you have overhead Atmos speakers, how many times have you stood up and walked over to your overhead speakers to see if they're working? Because you want them engaged. I do it all the time. I go over and it's like, I'll be watching a football game and I'll like, oh, yep, okay, they're engaged. They're up channeling. They're working it. And I think James Cameron, that's why I love this Terminator movie and how it works everything. It starts at the front, and then as you add your theater, you start to see, you hear the back channels. Another great panning scene at the opening of the movie was John Connor, when you first meet him, and he's revving his motorcycle, and again, it starts on the right side of the room, and as it comes to center, as he comes into the center of the screen, the sound comes into the center of the screen. And again, it's like, a lot of people don't consider that, you know, surround sound, because it's just, that's the front of the room. But again, I think that's what he was playing on. But there's a ton of scenes in this movie that he just really engages everything. When you first meet Dyson and he goes into the vault, you hear that echo, the noise, your room sounds like you're in a vault. That gets into the entire surround sound. There's a ton of ambient sounds throughout this movie, but what I really wanted to talk about was I have three favorite scenes in this movie that I used to show off my theater over the years. I've kind of gotten away from using this movie because it is kind of, you know, it's from the 90s. So there are better movies now that show off more, but going back for this podcast and watching this movie, and it really really brought me back to all the fun that I used to have in the 90s into the 2000s, because that was the heyday of like when these things got released over and over. I think they came out with a Blu-ray in 2000, then they came out with another Blu-ray in 2003. That was basically the same thing, but then they added a high def version. I have all of those copies, as you can see from the tweet that I put out. But anyways, yeah, so the first scene that I really, really enjoy, that is basically the opening of the movie. This scene here is filled with bass, it's filled with pans, it's filled with surround sound. You know, you start off in 2029 and the big battle that's going on, and you have the subtleties of the children in the background when the movie first opens. If you have the volume turned up to reference level and, you know, you're listening very closely, you can hear the kids playing in the background like ghosts. And then the crushing of the skulls, it just sounds so good. And it sets the tone that whenever I'd want to show somebody what a theater can do, this is the scene that I would put on. It's the first scene in a movie. It's the easiest to pull up. You just hit play, and it just really, really plays, and it really just blew people away. The scene when the Terminator is walking from right to left, and then he turns, looks at you, and when he fires that plasma gun into the screen, and the bass and the sound changes, because now he's in focus, it's in the middle, and it's just an amazing, amazing sound that it was just very powerful. Of course, you have all the explosions, the special effects, great bass here. And then you cut to the credits with all of the fire and the way the fire moves around the room, even in the early days on the VHS and the Laserdisc, it sounded really good. It sounds incredible now with the new DTS mix. It has evolved over the years and just gotten better and better. And it's just really a lot of fun. It's just such a fun scene that I love to go back to. Then after the credits, you go into the bar with Arnold. And that's a fun scene. It's not so much about the sound and the theater experience as much as it is. There's a few special effects things in there that I've seen over the years that you hear in the commentaries, different commentaries over the years. Like there's when the knife goes through the guy's shoulder, it's a different knife when it goes in than when it's actually stuck in him. You can see the handle is different if you slow it down, which that was fun back with one of my first experiences with a hi-fi VCR where I could go frame by frame. The Sony VCR I had a dial on it. That was a lot of fun. And you could just dial, one click was one frame. And I just went over these movies like crazy. And the guy that gets thrown into the kitchen and lands on the stove, and you could see the little jets of smoke that, you know, for the special effects, it's not his hands that are steaming. It's the actual jets shooting steam. So pretty funny things like that. If you go frame by frame on the knife that goes into Arnold's chest, you can see the knife bend. I guess that is home theater, because that's all the fun of having this stuff and just going through these things. The second scene that I always found fun, which is kind of an obscure scene, I got to admit, not a lot of people are probably going to be like blown away by this scene, but it really did blow me away back with the VHS copy, and I still use it now to compare my systems as things evolve in my system. I like to throw this on as a test to see how it compares, because I have used it since basically 92. So it's the scene when John Connor calls home and they go to his kitchen, and his foster mother is in the kitchen, and the phone rings. Well, the phone rings on the left side of the room. So your left speaker rings, and it sounds like there's a phone on the side of that side of your room. And it's like when I was a kid living in my parents' basement, you know, I was a kid at the time. It sounded like that one speaker over there. I was like, I would turn my head. I'm like, oh, is the phone ringing? Because I actually had a phone over there. So it was always fun to me. I loved that scene. And then it plays out. As the scene plays out, his foster mother is now on the phone with John. And you know that she's the, well, spoiler, she's the T-1000. And you can hear in the background, and this gets to some ambient sound, you hear the dog barking in the background, which is the clue that this is a Terminator. The foster father is over on the right side of the screen. And he's, you know, talking. So you hear his voice on the right side of the screen coming out of your right speaker. And then she stabs him in the face, and that sound goes, pans from center to right. It goes right, you know, you can hear it go through him on the right side of the screen. And this has just always been, like I said, a fun test for my sister to see how well the fronts were working, how well the mix was on whatever particular DVD, Blu-ray, Laserdisc at the time. And I just really, really enjoyed that scene. The last scene is another one that's not the, you know, it's not another one of those with the big explosions. It's not, it, you know, it is, it has that in the area of that scene, of the scene. It's what, so now this scene here is where they go to Cyberdyne and they go to blow up the building, and Miles Dyson is about to die. He's got that weight on the bomb, and Sarah is trapped. Arnold pulls her out of the room, and now he has to, the only way they can get out is to blow a hole in the wall to get to the hallway. Well, this one particular scene where he shoots the grenade, it blows a hole on the left side of the screen, and the wall shoots across the screen and hits the other side of the hallway on the right side of your screen. Now, I heard this at a demo at like a Tweeter, or if you don't know what Tweeter is, it was a store. or a home theater store where they were showing off a system speakers or something. And the way that it just impressed me. And ever since then, when I upgrade something, this is one of those scenes. It's probably the second scene I go to test my system. I love hearing that explosion on the left and the door landing on the right. It's just when that sounds clean, I know things are tuned right. I don't know why. I just love that scene. But as I stated earlier, I think that's what James Cameron was going for. As I said last week, if you only have two channels, you have a home theater and you can work towards more. But if you only have two channels, these scenes work for you. These scenes will work perfect. You don't even need a center channel. It'll pan from right to left and left to right perfectly with two channels. So I really think that's what James Cameron was going for, showing off. You know, he is the type of person since Avatar. He loves to be cutting edge. And I think he really likes to do stuff that hasn't been done before. So for extras on this set, I'd actually just like to talk more about what I think James Cameron was thinking when he was making this movie. Before this movie came out, I was so excited for this movie that I read the book. Of course, when you read a book, there's way more detail than in a movie. When I left the theater after seeing Terminator 2 on like opening night, I was actually a little disappointed because there were a lot of plot points left out that were in the book. Now, they did a good job at simplifying it for the movie and having the movie be more timely, but I thought they were great plot points to show the depth of the character of a Terminator and the depth of the character of Sarah and John. In the extras in this, the 4K doesn't have anything. It just has the theatrical version in 4K with the DTS Master Audio mix. But it also comes with the Blu-ray that has three different versions of the movie and a bunch of, you know, it has trailers, and those are fun to watch. I flipped through, I'll be honest, I didn't go through everything on this because I've watched all of this stuff over and over. Most of it, I flipped through both audio commentaries. I've heard them both before. There were times that I was like, oh, I don't remember this, but then I'd get to a part like when Cameron was talking, I'd be like, oh, yep, this is where he tells you this, this, and this. So I couldn't really listen to the whole entire thing because it was kind of repetitive for me. But it is, if you haven't listened to it, I do highly recommend it, especially if you like the movie. I know a lot of people like the theatrical version, and in most cases, that's how I feel about movies as well. You want to see how they presented it in the movie. But in this case, and I think obviously I'm biased because I read the book first, so I was expecting to see a certain thing in the theater. But I am so glad that he put out the special edition version because I think it really fleshes out the characters of Sarah, John, and the Terminator, Arnold's Terminator. So there's one particular scene in the special edition that where they have to change the setting on the chip. Because of that, because they had to change the setting on the chip. So let me back up a second. So in the theatrical version, John Connor asks Arnold, can you learn? And then Arnold says, I am a learning computer. The more I'm with humans, the more I learn. Boom. Simple. Done. We move on from there. But in the book, in the special edition version, Arnold's answer is different. He said his CPU is set when they go out on their own, the CPU is set to not learn. And you have to go into the chip and change, you have to flip the switch on the chip and turn him into a learning computer. So then that goes to the scene where Sarah and John have to do some head surgery on Arnold, pull the chip out, change the setting, flip the switch, and put the chip back in. So why that brings out the character is that, first off, at the beginning of the movie, the Terminator, Arnold, is just a computer. All he does is what he's told to do. He has no emotion. That's the Terminator we knew from 1984. That's the Terminator that's at the beginning of this movie. As the movie plays out after that, you start to see the Terminator start to learn, like when he flips down the visor on the police van and he gets the keys, or he'll look at some other characters in the movie and try to smile. He's learning. He's in at the very end when he says, hasta la vista, baby, that is a callback to him learning. The only reason he's learning is because they flipped that switch. But the other part of this scene that fleshes out Sarah and John is Sarah wants to destroy the chip. So they pull the chip out, they put it on the table to flip the switch, and Sarah wants to go at it with a sledgehammer. And John tells her no. And they have this argument because she doesn't trust Terminators. Her character has husband, but John's father was killed by one of these things. So she has a huge prejudice against Terminators. So she wants to kill this thing because she knows she can't trust it. But John, his first impression of a Terminator is this father figure that's trying to protect him. And then he uses that he's supposed to be a great leader and that his mother should listen to him. He uses that line. So you see the evolution of John becoming this leader, her trying to trust him. There's so much more to this scene that in the regular theatrical version, you don't get. And you don't get to see this evolution, because as the movie plays out, John's making decisions and Sarah is starting to trust the Terminator. Obviously, by the end of the movie, she puts her hand out, shakes his hand, showing that she has lost that prejudice. So that's why I like that part, that scene for the story of the movie. But the other part I like about that scene, and this is in all the extras and the audio commentaries, of how they shot that scene. And it's really, really cool. So if you didn't know, there's two sets of twins in this movie. The first set is the twin brothers that one stabs the other brother through the eye, the security guards at the mental institute. Those were twins. The other set of twins is Linda Hamilton. Linda Hamilton has a twin sister. They use their twin sister in the making of this scene. If you've seen the scene where they take the chip out of Arnold's head, Arnold is looking into a mirror. John's on one side of him holding the light. Sarah's on the other side performing the surgery. So the head that they're performing the surgery on is a double. It's a dummy. So it's a dummy. In the mirror is Arnold Schwarzenegger, but that's not a mirror. It's just a wall. It's an open window. So to film this scene, they had Arnold and Sarah on one side. Well, Linda Hamilton, I believe, Linda Hamilton is in the mirror, and then her sister is on the other side. They had to synchronize their movements to make it look like it was a reflection in the mirror. It's really cool. I'm not doing it justice. Find this scene, put on the audio commentary. They'll have all of that for you. But the way they shot the scene is really, really cool. So the only thing on this set that I haven't seen before was this, a new featurette, T2 reprogramming the Terminator. It was really good. I think it was like almost an hour long. I don't know if there was a lot of new information, but I do know it was a fresher featurette. When you've gone over this movie as many times as I have, it's hard to find stuff that I haven't heard before, because I've talked about this movie just going into my DVD stores, Laserdisc stores, and you know, we just talk about it ad nauseum. I love this movie. So with that, I guess I'll wrap up with, I haven't really talked about the 4K transfer. It is by far the best transfer so far, I think, of this movie. It's not the best 4K out there, but for this movie, I mean, I personally don't think you could see any better detail in anything in any other version. I thought they did a really good job of, yes, it's digitized, but I think that's what they were going for. They wanted to make it look more like a modern movie instead of, I've read some things online where people have speculated that as well. I really liked it. And especially with all the movies that we're seeing now, the modern ones, I thought it fit right in. The colors I thought were great, but I didn't think it was that big of a jump from the 1080 transfer. I AB'd a few scenes and it's a little bit better color wise and black level, but I didn't think it was like, if you weren't ABing it, I don't think you would notice the difference, but the clarity is definitely a lot better. It's such a more crisp picture in the 4K. So that's about all I got on Terminator 2. I hope you enjoyed it. Next week we will be doing Thor Ragnarok in 4K. That's going to be interesting. Can't wait to start delving into that. Let me know what you thought of Terminator 2, what you think of the cut. Which version do you like? Do you like the theatrical version? Or are you like me and you like the special edition version where it gives a little bit more info? You can tweet me at BrightsideHT, or you can email me at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. So that's it. Everybody have a great weekend. I will see you next week. Go push play.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey, Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.